I know that as a city councillor, you voted to keep New Westminster Electrical in public hands. It's still run by the city of New Westminster. How was that vote won?
Well, the resolution from the former mayor and a councillor were sort of looking at some save. They thought there would be some savings there to contract out the billing services. And what we experienced when the tenders came in, they weren't that much lower than what we were actually. One of them was even higher than what we were already paying, and we're paying, you know, good paying union jobs. And so the resolution passed, and then I reintroduced it using the NAFTA argument, and staff looked at it, and staff came back with concerns that within the end of the contract we would be paying more to do that work. So the council reversed their position on it.
That's great. Hear, hear. Thank you very much for that, Chuck. In that vein, how would you work to keep public services public?
We have to keep them public at all costs. We have to maintain our assets properly. There has to be value for the money or for the investment. If we have 50 jobs servicing rail cars in British Columbia, even though that's a cost to keep the asset rolling properly, those are jobs that pay taxes and money goes back into the economy. So we need to not only keep those jobs, we need to make sure that those jobs also become efficient, and we need to look at other contracts to do rail servicing for other companies. So I absolutely support keeping those jobs. What, you know, the odd year you may lose money, but at the end of the day, in 99 years, you know, that's a multi-billion dollar rail bed, for instance, the rail bed, and our great-great-grandchildren will still own that. And you can't risk taking those things away.
No, you can't. I had interviewed Jagrup Brar. He's the now new MLA for Surrey Panorama, and he is involved in developing small businesses, helping entrepreneurs get things going. What's your position with small business?
Well, you know, small business creates about 80% of the employment. You know, it's not big business that creates all the jobs. Big businesses are usually fairly efficient, use all the modern technologies to have small workforces. Small businesses are hard-working people. They employ a lot of people. And eventually small businesses become big businesses, and as they profit and as they start to produce more, they can pay more, they can start giving benefits and decent wages. So small business is a very key component in any community.
Yeah, and they keep all the money that is generated by small business, all the income is spent here in BC because the money stays here, as opposed to big business whose money, like we just said earlier, goes offshore. We don't know where it goes, ends up anywhere. Yeah, so I totally agree with you. Thanks, Chuck. If in power with an NDP government, would you fix the labor code?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the pendulum of fairness has swung away, and people to be able to democratically organize on their job sites without fear of intimidation, without fear of termination. We need officers that intervene immediately if the intimidation happens, and we need to have a balanced labor code that represents workers fairly and represents employers fairly. And you know, we were heading that way under the previous government. Even some of the business community weren't that concerned about where the labor code was going, and so we've seen a sharp right turn on it, and that concerns me greatly, because what happens then is you have fewer decent paying jobs, and again less money for the economy, and a greater cost of services that the government needs to provide for those that fall through those cracks.
And what about the $6 an hour training wage? What's your position there?
just like they say, $6 sucks. You know, I mean, that is just ludicrous. When you look at the business practices of some corporations, fast food chains, and some big box stores, it's they'll take advantage of that. They'll have you in there for the whole training period time, and then, you know, they'll terminate you, or they'll move you on to another position, and you start your probation all over again, which is the case in of a Walmart employee that's approached me. And so, you know, living in the Lower Mainland in British Columbia, where there's very high rents, very high real estate costs, very little land left, it's very expensive to live here. $8 an hour isn't even enough to live here. And so to now go to $6, how can a young person live on $6 an hour? They can't. They have to stay at home. And so it's not helping them get out into the world and fending for themselves. It's basically, you know, throwing them some crumbs while they're working for nothing, really.
Right. What about WCB? The Liberals have really cut back on the WCB, and they've watered down the legislation. Would you be able to go in there and fix that if you were in power?
Well, you have to. The Workers' Compensation Board, you know, they're again, they're like the American meat industry, where they started looking at self-regulation, thinking that there was an advantage to self-regulation. I think in the American meat industry, chances of getting inspected are once in 150 years or something. And so WCB is working the same way. They've cut a lot of their frontline investigators and inspectors. The appeals process, which they said they were streamlining, hasn't been streamlined at all. They've cut a few of the adjudicators, and they've cut a lot of the vice chairs, I think they're called, and that's just created a huge backlog again. So they're making money off payroll taxes and off employer taxes, and they're not putting it where it needs to be, and that's to sustain the Workers' Compensation Board, so it's there for workers.
Do you think that's part of the reason why they now say they have a budget surplus, is the monies that they're saving from not actually providing services?
Well, you know, the service cuts over the last few years has certainly helped create a surplus, or create that. The enormous tax cuts they had at first, you know, certainly didn't help balance any books. But they seem to have a plan from the onset that, you know, they would sell some assets and cut back on all sorts of government services and jobs and rip up collective agreements. And so there's no doubt that what they've done has basically funded their surplus. And now they're boasting that it's their, you know, their prudent government that has created the surplus. Really, they've taken it from us. And now they're throwing it back to us in little pieces and bits. I think they've hired something like 13,000 workers in social services and health. Well, those are workers that they've already terminated. 40% of the frontline workers in social services lost their jobs. And now they're saying, oh, yeah, I guess it was too deep. We need to hire some back. So, you know, they're showing us a truly false economy here.
Yeah, along with throwing us bits and pieces of leftovers, I guess, from their dinner plates, they're using public money to advertise these little crumbs that they're giving us. If the NDP were in power and you were part of that government, would you support the NDP using the public money to fund advertising for itself?
You know, other than to show the public where certain new initiatives that they can reach out and go access, what's going on with this government is absolute fabrications. I mean, they're saying ads, and I'm sure some of their ads have been questioned and they had to tone them down because they changed. One ad says, the greatest country, greatest province in the world for work, and then it says in smaller writing, in food services and retail and tourism. Well, those are seasonal jobs usually. They're the lowest paying jobs. So you're saying this is the best province in the world to live in, to work in the lowest paying jobs. I mean, it's a joke. And then if you read the real fine print on the bottom, when it talks about construction increasing and the economy improving, well, we're building the Olympics, for one thing, and plus many people are retiring. The statistics on youth employment, that trend, the 10-year trend that they're showing now, that's a trend that's been there since I remember using that at the Youth Advisory Committee in 1998, showing the youth what the trend will be in 10 and 15 years. So this is nothing new, and it's certainly not created by the current Liberal government. These are just trends, and trends can change. The war in Iraq stops. There's $7 billion of money being generated in Washington State right now because of the war effort. The war in Iraq stops. Some of that money will cease. Some of that investment that's producing in Canada will cease. There are all sorts of variables that can change those statistics anytime, and they're predicting 210 and 215. That's just unacceptable to use taxpayers' dollars for that. Absolutely unacceptable.
Joyce Murray is big on the Safe Streets Act. What do you think about this act?
Well, actually, again, in 1998, the city of New Westminster brought in the anti-panhandling bylaw. It passed a vote of 6-1 with myself voting against it. Since we brought it in 1998, I spoke to the assistant police chief a couple of weeks ago. He didn't believe that there have been any convictions under our anti-panhandling bylaw, which is fairly close to the Safe Streets Act. I talked to him about the aggressive panhandling, because that's what got everybody going, was the violent, aggressive panhandling. And there are provisions of the criminal code that the police would use before they would use our bylaw. Our bylaw can be challenged by civil liberties. The criminal code, it's more difficult to challenge. So they would just use the criminal code or provisions for assault, for aggressive panhandling, that they can implement. And so I think it's just there to terrify people, make them think things are worse than they are. And the government's creating the problem with homelessness and with panhandling. And then to impose fine, well, the provincial government doesn't even impose a penalty. The city imposed a $2,000 fine for panhandling and breaking any of the provisions of the bylaw. Well, you have to panhandle pretty aggressively to come up with $2,000. So to me, it's just they're trying to create an issue and say that the NDP doesn't believe in safe streets. That's not true. We believe in safe streets, but we believe there's better ways of achieving that, and that's by providing for those people in need, the desperate people.
Is there anything that's important to you and that you would like to see done regarding your political vision for BC?
Well, you know, something that's always been very near and dear to my heart is the issue with regards to youth with addiction services and addiction problems. You know, statistics show that for every dollar you spend, you save $6 or $7 in emergency rollouts, policing costs, and just costs to the society, breaking and entering. And so, you know, if we invested that money in intervening early with youth that fall through the cracks, sometimes for no fault of their own, I think there's huge dividends there. And this government is cutting back on those services. So a lot of those kids will never get out of the gutter. They won't even make it to adulthood. And I've seen it happen in our community with youth that fall into that hole, and there's no service for them. So That certainly would be one of my priorities.
Yeah, New Westminster seems to have a very high poverty level. There's a lot of poor youth and seniors living in New Westminster. And it seems that there's not very good cheap places to go shopping that, you know, have good paying jobs. For instance, the Safeway at Royal City Centre is very expensive. And when you go in there, shopping is very, high middle class type prices, and you have a lot of seniors stuck trying to shop there. Has you as a city councilor looked at any ways of bringing in some shopping that would be a little bit more in line to the budgets of the seniors?
Well, it's sort of difficult for us to sort of intervene in pricing of stores, but I understand what you're saying. I've certainly been opposed to the expansion of the big box stores, because what happens then is those seniors, again, you start losing your competition in the uptown area, and now the only way to get your groceries or your commodities is to travel. So you're no longer a walkable community. You can't walk to get that service. You have to get a car, you have to get a taxi, you have to get a handy dart. Again, those are all taxing our road system and our services. So other than opposing that direction that we're going in development, I think that's about the only way you can take a stand on that.
I was just thinking, just basically of like, there's a superstore, I think, being built just on the other side of 10th Avenue on Burnaby side, just as you're heading out towards 22nd Street. I think you've seen the development there. That's kind of what the city of Burnaby has been doing. And how does that affect your urban vision with respect to, you know, that seniors now may choose to go and visit that store, you know, using taxis and what other transportation methods they use?
Well, you know, it's there's a few factors. One is supply and demand, and one is, you know, distance of travel and that. So those will all play into the equation. If we start losing stores in New Westminster, we're losing fairly high tax bases. You get a business complex that has a bunch of empty stores, you know, the tax base will go down. And so we need to have, you know, sustainable communities where you can walk to services and have services provided in areas, so that there's a balance between residential tax base, commercial, which is 5 times residential, and then industrial, which is 10 times residential. You need all of that working together harmoniously in order to have a complete community. And we're not heading that way. We're just heading on who has the most money to invest and who has the best strategic plan to knock the competition out. And I think that's a very dangerous direction that we're heading.
I also know that you were involved in the campaign against Walmart, the big box store that's built in Queensboro. Has City Council had any complaints, or have you seen any negative impact from that Walmart yet?
Well, I wasn't involved in the campaign. I was a city councilor that voted in opposition to it and spoke quite passionately on it, only because of the history that I have seen of Walmart, which is apparently the most litigious company in the world. They've got so many court cases going on. This is a company that makes $1 billion a day globally. You know, the gross is $1 billion a day. You know, so in order to have sustainable communities, you have to look very closely at those kinds of developments. And the Walmart, I've heard that Zellers is suffering, which is in the uptown. I've heard that there's rumors that the Army Navy may be moving, which is in the downtown. So I am concerned, and we've seen it happen in other communities where basically all the small mom and pop businesses have been wiped out and Walmart has taken over. And once they control the market, you know, you're not going to get your 48 roll of Mr. Whipple for $6 anymore, because where else are you going to go when there's nowhere else to sell it? And so they can change their prices anytime they want. And once there's restricted competition, they can profit more.
Thank you, Chuck, for being a guest on Labor Radio. This has been Chuck Puckmeyer, candidate for the NDP nomination in New Westminster. I'm Shane Polak, and you're listening to Labor Radio on CJSF FM 90.1.